Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, hello, hello. So today we're doing things a little bit different. But first off, welcome back to episode 178 of the Coffee Club podcast. Today, the boys are gone. They've left me alone. I'm here on my lonesome. But luckily, we do have producer Tom Wang in the house.
Ayo.
He's here for the
off camera.
He's not on camera, but it'll make sense because so essentially what's happened this week is that Ollie is away. He's in China racing at the World Indoors. And we had a fun episode lined up, a little interview on with George, but then George unfortunately got sick this week. So we decided to try to do things a little bit different. And what that means is we're going to just do a kind of fun little Q&A. So on our Instagram, we saw some questions. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted them. And yeah, we're just going to take a crack at them, kind of solo vibe. Tom will be reading them out. And we'll just see how it goes. Kind of a new thing. New for me, new for you. First times, you know, they can be challenging. They can be emotional. They can be difficult. But we're going to get through them and we're going to learn and grow from it. So yeah, Morgan, just a little update, check in with me. I'm just here training, vibing out, coming back from my injury still, and things are progressing really nicely. Thanks for asking. I don't know if any of the questions, maybe none of the questions are about that. So if anyone was wondering, coming back from my injury, everyone's doing well. You know, we're coming off a big NCAA indoors weekend, which was pretty cool. Some awesome action there. I think we'll probably get into more of that stuff later. Like when the boys are back and we have more of a usual type episode. But I don't know what the questions are. I have not seen the questions, so this is going to be off the dome, authentic, real, no secrets, Q&A, and we're just going to see how it goes. How does that sound, Tom?
That sounds great. Usually, you know, in the past we've done Cauldron, I put a little time and effort. Well, we usually get like too many questions to answer on the podcast, but this time, since we have a episode dedicated to just Q&A. That plus Morgan and I are a bit lazy to put together a kind of a curated Q&A interview session. We're just going to try to knock down every single one of them. Also, just as a thank you to everyone who's you know, been listening and has been interacting with us. It's been a lot of fun. So yeah. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Okay, I've put a request out to the Discord just for rapid fire style questions. So maybe I could start off with one as a warm up, and I'll be checking the Discord, monitoring that to see if any fun ones come in and intersperse them amongst our Coffee Cauldron mailbag.
Sensational.
Okay. So the first one is actually an overdue one. You've been asked this before and you haven't given an answer. You're not, do you know what it is?
I thought it was going to be something about, blow a kiss.
Oh, no. I think you've done that, but you did that at the Milrose game. So I think okay, that counted. This one is, what is your chest rating, Morgan? That's from Jason.
You say that's rapid fire, but that's actually a really deep question. So
we have the time today.
So I'll try to answer this as quickly as possible because I don't know if how many people are listening to this for my chest, for purposes of finding out about my relationship with chess and my rating. So I got into chess like many during COVID. I didn't get into it because of Queen's Gambit, but I got out into it at the same time that Queen's Gambit. I got into it when everyone else got into it. And I was pretty disciplined. I don't know if discipline is the right word. I was pretty addicted initially. And I was playing a lot of chess. And I was playing on a website called, it's Lee Chess or Lee Chess. And I got my rating up to between 1300 and 1400. I always play 10 minute. I don't know if that's referred to as classical or whatever online. So I got my rating up to that. And then I didn't touch it for 3 to 4 years, however long it's been since that. And then recently I got back into it. I'm part of manager Tom Wang's family plan on chess.com. And so I came over to chess.com, which I think is a more competitive site anyway. That's where most people play. And my rating on that was at just, I think, 1,000 from the few games that I had played like a long time ago. But I didn't play on it before. So I'm really excited to get back into it, get back on the horse, et cetera. I have all these fond memories of back in the day playing and having success. And I just get my absolute butt kicked. And my rating fell all the way down to below 700. I want to say 600, 650. And so that was my new floor. That's where I fell to. And ever since that moment, I've been working my way out, trying to dig myself out of this hole. And I'm up to close to 900 now. So, but it's a, I have a theory that I got a lot dumber in those few years. So I don't know exactly what would be the cause for that. Maybe too much running, something along those lines. But it's a lot harder than what I remember it being. Maybe everyone else has gotten better in the meantime. That could be a probability. I mean, everyone's getting smarter. There's so much good information out there on YouTube with it. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.
I think it does. It's also a good springboard into our first coffee cauldron question. Would you be ready for it?
I'm ready.
Dear Morgan, first off, I would like to say I thoroughly enjoy the pod and flex on all my XC friends with my coffee club shirt. Secondly, what do you think of the high school teenage distancing? It's only been getting faster and faster, it seems like. Plus all the colleges limiting roster spots. It seems like you have to run sub 15 to go D1 nowadays. Thank you, Silas.
Thank you, Silas. Love that you have the merch. When Tom was originally reading out that question, I don't know why, but my initial thought was, I don't think much of the teenage distancing. but then how the rest of the question went, it's a very good question. It's an amazing question. And I think a lot of the rest of that question. So yeah, it's, I can't even imagine what it's like to be are youngin', a teenager coming up in the world of distance running. I think when I was coming up, I was really lucky that things were a lot more ignorant. I think we were not so aware of what everyone else was doing around the world. We weren't so aware of what was good training. We weren't feeling pressures of having to perform at a certain level to get scholarships. And we could focus more on, I think, what the point of the sport is, which is to run with your friends, have fun, grow, improve, et cetera, et cetera. Today, as for the reasons that you mentioned, it's so different, I think. I think when you're especially thinking about roster spots and colleges trying to go D1, then getting limited, the sport, yeah, less funding at a college level and everyone getting faster. Yeah, that's a squeeze from both angles. And I think to be in the middle of that, I'm sure it can be very challenging, and I hope that you're not putting too much pressure on yourself at a young age, because, you know, at the end of the day, when you're who the hell knows? Like the thing is, the way this sport works, who knows who's going to be come out better or worse when you're young? I think it's just, you can't like worry about that stuff too much. I think what's really, really good and really exciting for everyone out there is that from what I see, everyone as a whole is training better and in a much more healthy way. So from my angle, yes, the top is getting faster and more competitive, but it may be even more so. I'm sure the middle and the back of the pack is getting way more faster. And I know some kids are crushing in high school and training really hard, and some people might call it overtraining or whatever. But I think in general, it seems like everyone's training way better. And I think it in a way that sets you up better later in life, in college or as a pro or elite, you know, whatever it is, wherever you want your running to take you. So I think that's all really exciting. And I think, I mean, it's just crazy. I think it was just last week, Sam Ruth, 15-year-old from New Zealand, broke 4, became the youngest person ever to do it. And I don't know, like, what do you even say about that? How do you... That's when I talk about ignorance. It's like, yeah, it's got to be tough sometimes when you see like a kid doing that. And I can tell you when I was 15, he would have beat me by about 20 seconds. And that's the same of all my peers. And some of my peers are the best runners in the world now. And this kid would be beating them by 20 seconds. So it's just to have that dichotomy and to be so exposed to these amazing things. It's awesome. But yeah, I can see how there would be some negatives to it. So I don't know if that really does that answer the question?
It does. Did you run 4:18 as a 15-year-old?
I didn't even run that much. Like as a 15-year-old, I think I remember I tried to get the World Youth Qualifier in the 1500, which was 3:52, and I didn't get it. And so that's probably equivalent to a 420 mile, and that's a year later.
No, that's probably more like 410. That's really fast.
Oh yeah, 410. Yeah. Sorry, I did the math wrong there.
That's still really fast.
Yeah, thank you. No, but but still, at 15, I was barely even running.
You were dancing more.
I was a dancer. I was seawalking. So yeah, I think it's crazy, and I think there's a lot of positives. But I just hope that you can be protected from some of the maybe pressures that you pointed out. And I think that if you want to make it in running, like, you just gotta focus on trying to do, you know, those right things, and you can't stress about these external things like roster spots or what other people are doing so much, which I imagine does weigh on some people. I think you got to try eliminate that, and especially when you're young, focus on, you know, the fun of it, and try to build a foundation for when you're older. Try to become a runner that you're focused on things that are sustainable and long-term, you know, and learn along the way. I wouldn't stress about specifically running times or anything like that. I think that's that can take you down some negative paths.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I think it's important to not, like you're also trying to find the right school for you. So it's not all just about like what time you run and where you can run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yeah. If you're specifically with college stuff, it's, yeah, no one knows, you know, it's not like there's one school that works for you and 99 that don't, you know, there's a lot of schools that work for you and in different ways. And if you want it, like, and you're committed to it, you'll find your way to get there. There's a lot of different paths, and the long ones are often ultimately the better ones.
Mm. Very wise, Morgan.
Thank you. I'm pretending to be today.
I have another Dear Morgan. Dear Morgan, my wife bought me an Ollie and Eugene shirt a few years ago. Nice present, right? Wrong.
No.
Every time I wear it, she finds a way to sneak a kiss on shirt Ollie.
Oh, no.
I found it under her pillow once. What do I do? Ollie's op.
That's a really, I mean, yeah, nice gift. Slight backfire. It seems like she really bought the gift for herself. And that's a bit selfish, but I understand it. And it seems like you're not open to an extra person in your relationship. So I would think that you probably have to take that shirt, lock it up somewhere safe, and you can only really wear it when you're not around her, because clearly she can't control herself when she's around the shirt. And it seems like, you didn't say this, but it seems like that's not something that you want in your relationship. And I don't want to be responsible as a member of Coffee Club who manufactured that shirt for the downfall of your relationship or any problems that you may face down the line related to the Ollie and Eugene shirt. So I think you have to be really cautious here and lock it up. And I would wear it maybe when you go to the park or the beach with your friends, but she's not there, or you go for a run, go for training, but you just make sure she's not around when you are wearing it. And then I think it's safe and you can express yourself how you want to express yourself, but just not when she's there, because clearly that doesn't work.
Maybe couples therapies in their future.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to say that, but if that is an option, that's definitely an option. I've heard about a couple of other couples that had to go to therapy for the same reason. So yeah, and it's worked for them as well. So it could work for you, but I would first try the other stuff and then check in. If it's not working, then consider therapy.
All right. We have a voice note next. I'll read the message and then I'll play it. I'm really not sure what is going to, I haven't pre-screened the
voice. You haven't screened the voice note?
No, so well.
This is dangerous. This is risky.
This one is actually from a Discorder. What up, Gus? Think you attached an audio file for ya. Also unrelated, but why do y'all never wear socks while recording, Lamau? Don't worry, I'm not complaining. Love, Rupert from the Discord.
I'm not actually generally a big sock guy. I like to feel the ground beneath my feet. And the thing is, as runners, we wear socks and shoes when we train, and we beat our feet up in there and they get all sweaty. So I think it's nice in your off time to let those puppies free and air them out. But I'm wearing socks right now for anyone who's listening, so I'm proving him wrong.
All right, here we go.
What's up, Morgan? So I've been training with one of my buddies for the last like 3 or 4 years now, and it's going great. Obviously, we're at very similar level of fitness. We do most of our workouts and our races together. But he does this thing in every workout where he just sits on my ass and leeches off my life force. So if it's super windy or we're doing a hard rep, I'm just crushing from the front and he's sitting along for a free ride. And it's gotten to the point where I think I need to have an intervention. So I'm just wondering how I should go about this because I don't want to lose my training buddy. Thanks, Morgan.
Wow. Thank you, Rupert, for that. That's a really tough one. And I'll be honest, like we have people like that on our team. I'm not going to name who they are. And, you know, it's really hard because it's like, come on, we're trying to work together here. We're trying to make each other better. What are you trying to prove? This is a session. We're meant to be, you know, maybe leading an equal amount of reps or whatever amount makes sense. Maybe some days you feel better. Maybe some days he feels better, you know, but it should be equitable. And it seems like in this situation, he is stealing your life force. And that's just never equitable when someone is stealing your life force. So my recommendation would be, I think you need to, I'm trying to think of how to kind of be subtle about this and smart because I was thinking that maybe you just sit on him next time and you give him a little taste of his own medicine. I think if you bring it up to him and you confront him about it directly, perhaps that could lead to some conflict, which would result in loss of a training partner. But that is an option. But I think you, much like Jakob Ingebrigts, like you even go Jakob in, was it Turkey, Dublin? No, where was it? Dublin, Ireland, Eurocross. When he's tucked in, you make a really big scene out of sitting on him, but don't say anything about it. Don't like, just act like it's normal. And if he slows down, you slow down. If he slows down more, you slow down more. And you just really commit to sitting on him and then I'll kick him at the end. And I think if you do that correctly, he will get a taste of his own medicine and hopefully he on his own will be able to reflect and come to the conclusion, this is what I've been doing to Rupert every single time we work out. And I'm meant to be his training partner. This is not nice at all. I don't like this at all. I'm never going to do this again. And then perhaps you guys will have figured out the situation and that'll be that. That's the goal, is I think that's what you should do. I think you should also just start making a really big deal out of how good runners are that lead races a lot. For example, Steve Prefontaine, a lot of Steve Prefontaine quotes, you know, every time you see him, just to sacrifice the gift. No, what, how am I blanking on this quote right now? Just, okay, go with this one. The best pace is a suicide pace, and today seems like a good day to die. Every time you see him, drop that. You're good. To give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift. Yes. You drop these around him, Steve Prefontaine. Who else is good at leading? Jakob. who else? I don't know.
He's getting all the fitness, right? You're doing all the work, so you're getting all the fitness.
This is true.
You should. The results should just speak for themselves.
Well, this is a interesting extra part of the question, which I'd love to hear back from Rupert, is who's beating each other in races? How are the race results going? Because, yeah, when it happens in our little bubble, in our training group, yeah, it's like, I wouldn't say it's really linked to, it's just an annoying thing, but it's not necessarily really linked to races. But as Tom said, I think you should feel good about all the gains that you are getting from leading. So you're really in a win-win situation here because you are like one side, you're getting these big gains, you're learning to lead, being big, tough and strong. And then, yeah, if you try the other side, I don't know what the other side is, but then it works out and then you split it 50-50 and you can retain your life force.
It's all about the life force.
It's key.
Dear Morgan, can you explain how your and Cinta's love story came about? I know she joined OAC, but was it love at first sight? Did you become friends first? Who asked who out? Did she friendzone you? Demi.
Thank you, Demi. Well, let's see. Let's see. This is a story. I don't know how much of it I can reveal. But what I can say is that love always wins. And there are certain boundaries that people may put up. For example, you shouldn't date your teammates. You shouldn't date your coworkers. And I used to be someone who believed in boundaries. I used to be someone that believed in rules. I understood that they were there for a reason, and I abided by them. That was until I laid eyes upon Cinta. She changed everything. And from that point on, I knew I couldn't abide by the rules, and I fell in love with my teammate. And that was that.
The rest is history. Hi, Morgan. Australia and New Zealand have such a rich history of track and field trading cards, but they've been few and far between since the Tokyo Olympics. Can Coffee Club revive this great tradition with some trading cards of the boys? Sincerely, Will R.
Okay, this question is boggling my mind on a couple of levels, because when he said a rich history of trading cards, that's what it is, correct?
Yeah, well, it was like track and field.
Track and field trading cards. I was like, oh, this must have been like back in the 80s. And then he said,
Tokyo.
Up to Tokyo. And I was thinking, I lived in Australia my whole life before I came to the US. So assumedly during this time of this rich history, and I have never heard of these trading cards before. With that said, sounds like an amazing idea, and we should definitely look into that. What do you think, Tom? Should we make it happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we've been sent some really good ones before, yeah, like custom.
The Jakob one, right?
Homemade Jakob one. But people, when I was in college, maybe, I think people made some, like just as like a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
So maybe that is something that we can do and sell as merch and become rich through.
Well, in the spirit of Tokyo, it would be really cool if we, you know, it was like our own version of Pokemon cards.
That would be so cool.
You know,
that'd be amazing.
In the spirit of, you know, Japanese culture and art and...
Yeah, if there's anyone that's listening that is into actually making art, specifically Japanese manga anime style, hit us up in the DMs because we're looking for an artist to work with on that. So, yeah, I don't know about this rich history. Maybe I'm just ignorant of it, but it sounds like something that would be really fun to bring back.
Cool, cool, cool. Big fan of you guys from the Coffee Club. It's always exciting to see any of you three in the lineup of races that I happen to be watching. I'm a prior high school distance runner who lost the love of running for 10-ish years, but I've been on and off with the mileage again for about 2 years. I just decided to train for a marathon in October with an old friend slash teammate from the high school years and feel like I need some guidance on training again. Any tips on getting into marathon mileage without hurting myself? Much love, Dell. P.S., I'd be down to chat about training in the future for a paid consultation type of thing, if that's something of interest. Sent from my iPhone.
Thank you. Was it Dell?
Dell.
Thank you. It's funny because we were literally talking about, I was like, Tom, I want to be an online coach. I was like talking to him about that yesterday. He's like, yeah, you probably don't have time. I was like, no, it's my future. It's my passion. But yeah, thank you so much for the question. I think that's really cool that you are getting back into running, especially, you know, the marathon scene at our age is just so fun, so social. So absolutely cool. Yeah, if you ran in high school, it's good because you already obviously have this big base of knowledge. And I'm sure that, you know, that fitness in a way doesn't go away. Like it comes back like over time, you know, your body knows what it feels like, which is a big step up on someone who's starting anew at that age, I imagine. But in terms of, I don't think, in terms of actually answering your question, I don't think you can do it too slow. I really don't. I think if you're building back into it, you need to start slow. I think that's really important. And especially just, you know, start with easy miles, gradually build it up as the body feels right. Like I think your body is going to be your guide, is going to hold your hand through it as long as you're aware and listening to it, if that makes sense. So I would start super easy. I don't know what like your actual starting point is, if that's 30 miles a week, 40 miles a week, 50 miles a week, whatever it is, you try it out and yeah, you be conservative, and you build up slowly from there, starting with focusing on easy miles and volume, as easy as you need. And once that feels comfortable, you start adding in a little bit of faster stuff, strides, all those other things that you probably know about. But I think the focus has to be just nice, consistent growth. And I'm actually really excited for you, because I think I remember in my life, that's one of the funnest times, is when you're able to build up slowly and you're starting from a, you know, a lower point where you haven't been training. Because if you do it right, the improvements that you start seeing on even a week to week basis are so amazing and it feels so good. So yeah, that's kind of my tips, is just really, really listen to the body and start slow and work with it, and then build things in slowly over time. And if you do that, you build this massive foundation, which is what you want. You want the biggest foundation for your house possible. And as you do it more and you get more into it, I think naturally you'll start adding in those other things like workouts, you know, and it'll just come to you. I really believe that, I think. So that's how I'd recommend you do it.
How many 420 pies can he eat at once? It's Crack Rock from the Discord.
Thank you, Crack Rock. Dude, I could probably down four.
What
four
is
to
that?
Five.
What is a 420 pie?
It's a meat pie.
Oh.
It's just like a...
It's an Aussie thing?
Yeah, but it's like a brand that's be like petrol station, like gas...
Okay.
Gas station. Meat pie. Very...
It's like a Twinkie, but meat.
Exactly like a Twinkie. Yeah, just as creamy.
That's good. All right. I'm going to butcher the name on this next one. I think this is an international listener. Dear Morgan, hi. I'm definitely your biggest fan.
Thank you.
So I just have one quick question. Are any of you running either Oslo or Stockholm Diamond this year? Signed, Sigurd Egeland Valseth.
That sounds like a Viking name.
Yeah, I think so.
Scandinavian for sure.
Yeah, that might be why it's pretty close to Oslo and Stockholm.
Makes sense. Yeah. You know, that's a great question and I don't have an answer. I have no idea. I think hopefully some of us will be there, but at this point, it's the way it works, especially with Diamond Leagues that far away, you just don't know. I think maybe Ollie and George would know what their schedules are a bit more, and I'll ask them next time they're on. Well, it's going to make sense that soon we'll start getting to talking about what our outdoor schedules will be, so we'll get into that. Personally, I'm on that comeback from injury train, so there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding what races I will be doing, but I would love to do one of those. Like, I think those are at the top of my list in terms of races that I would love to do just for the experience of them.
Maybe we get a lot of in the DMs and emails, like what races you guys are racing. Maybe you could illuminate, you know, what, and most of the time the answer is like, you're not sure.
Yes.
Maybe you could talk just like briefly about what, like what goes into planning your schedule and season and why it's an, I don't know most of the time.
Yeah, so I'll try to give as succinct an answer to this as possible without rambling on for too long. So I think it kind of follows like some level of common sense, but I think the actual nitty-gritty of it is probably foreign to most people. So if you're at the top, you can, like if you're a Yard, you can sit down with Dathan in freaking November and you can say, I want to do these races. And then you
slam. Send,
yeah, or you can get slammed. You send them to your agent and he gets you into those races and you're golden. You've got your season planned out. That's the case for a few people at the top. For most people, such as myself, and even some really good people, you'd be surprised, they're not going to get confirmation on all the races that they would like to do, you know, when it comes to Diamond Leagues and stuff, especially not early in the year. You know, these organizers are putting together fields. And generally speaking, the way it works with distance events is, and you guys see this reflected in the races, each race organizer is obsessed with trying to break a record, national records, but even a world record is the biggest goal. So they put most of their effort into trying to secure a Jakob Ingebrigtsen in the 5K, get the best, like a Hagos Gebrewet, Yomif Kijalcha. That's what they're trying to secure. They want to get a few people like that locked in for the field. And then the rest of the field, they don't care about as much. And it becomes a bit political with your agents and their relationships with the meet organizers. it becomes down to form, especially like, you know, the current form of the different people. So if you're, you know, in kind of where I'm at generally, like let's say take last year as an example, like I didn't know that I was going to be racing in any Diamond Leagues when I started the year. And so for me, it was more like, let's put down on the calendar the races that I know I can do. And then be aware of these other ones, ask my agent to try to get me into them, and we'll see what happens. We'll prepare the best that we can. So that's why I think it's so amazing. That's another reason why it's so good for athletes to take care of standards and stuff at a race like BU or like during the earlier in the year, because those are more reliable. If you're part of a team like the OAC, you know, we are going to BU to set up the races and we have more control. These other races, the Diamond Leagues, we have zero control generally, and there's so much uncertainty as to which ones you'll actually be doing. So when it comes down to it, you know, I remember even Joe during his year when he was running all these amazing 5Ks, and, you know, he'd run sub 13 once or twice already in the year, 12:53 or 4 indoors. He wasn't getting approved, like he wasn't getting into these races early. He eventually got into them, maybe a couple weeks before them, but they weren't even telling him that he was like accepted into these races early. So you just have to hope and prepare the best that you can at times. And yeah, that's generally it, especially if you're not the top. There's just a few who can really like bank on exactly what races they're going to do. And then for the rest of us, you know, it's a bit more uncertain. And that's not even taking into account injuries and changing plans, you know, all this other complications which come up and affect which races you do as well. So those are kind of a couple of delays to it.
Hello, Gus, George, Morgan, Ollie, and Tom. My question is, when is Ritz finally coming on the show? The pod has been going on for years, and the fans finally need an episode with the man, myth, and legend, Dathan Ritzenheim. And what do you think about the fact that Jingy apparently also plays the piano besides being the best middle distance runner on the planet? See Instagram. Love the pod, Tom R.
Thank you. Is it Tom?
Yeah, not me.
Okay. Tom, thank you for the question. Jingy playing the piano, what can't that man do? Put out a banger, little promo preview for his World Indoors, his team. Tom, we were talking about before how his team from a social media or even just content in general standpoint is absolutely crushing right now and we're loving it. I'm not convinced he does play the piano though. I think he just knows how to play the opening chords of, what song was it?
I don't know the name of the song. It's really bad.
Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's forget about Dre. No. Is it that? I don't know. Whatever it is. Yeah, I don't think he does know how to play the piano, but if he did, wouldn't put it past.
Still Dre.
That's the one. Yeah. What can't this man do? Driving his Ferraris, his Lambos, playing the piano. It's all par for the course. So good for him. In terms of the actual question about Ritz, you know, I'm going to be straight up and just say he might never come on the podcast. We've asked him a couple of times. He has declined. And the thing is, Ritz loves the camera. He loves the camera. He loves talking, which are two elements of a podcast. So he should be down, right? Like, is that crazy?
His son, what could do it is his son who loves the podcast and who he buys merch
shout out to Jude.
For.
Yeah.
We love that. So that. Yeah. That could be the final blow.
I don't think he listens to, he says he doesn't listen to the podcast, but I think people tell him about some things that go on the podcast. But yeah, we've asked him politely a few times and he's declined impolitely. So, you know, what more can you do? I think maybe we'll have to really butter him up for something special. I think one time he did give us an ultimatum. I can't remember what it was. Maybe we had to like win the freaking Olympics or something and then he'll come on. So he's setting up barriers and we're trying to create bridges, but it's just, you know, we're doing the best we can. Hopefully we can get him on eventually. Probably be about an 11-hour episode. So when it does happen, it'll be big, but yeah, cannot promise anything.
What would your advice be for a younger, in parentheses, 16-year-old runner who is very driven and willing to train hard, but is struggling to get a breakthrough in performance? My dream is to run in college, but I need to bring my PBs down by quite a bit, relatively quickly. I love the sport and always will, but would also love to see a big breakthrough. Thank you and go Coffee Club. That's Archie.
Thanks, Archie.
Coffee emoji, dog emoji, running emoji, smoke emoji.
Amazing use of emojis, in particular the smoke one. So, Archie, I think it's a good question. It's pretty similar in some ways to the first question. And this is might sound really cliched on a surface level, but I think you just have to commit to the process. And specifically, what I think that looks like in your case is you have to surround yourself with people that you really trust. And I think that means a coach that you trust and that you enjoy working with. And hopefully good training partners, teammates. I think that's ideal. And maybe you don't have control over all these things. I'm not sure exactly what your situation is, but I think the pressure, the burden that you describe of needing to get your times down is not really, yes, that can motivate you. Yes, you set goals, but it's not something that, you know, you don't want it to suffocate you at the same time, and you don't want it to affect your emotions, and you don't want it to really like dictate, you know, how you feel about yourself and all these different things. You can offload, I think, a lot of that burden by having the right people around you that you trust to guide you and take care of it. I think we all know that times are something external and ultimately out of your control. So you can't really worry, like worrying about them a lot is a recipe for disaster in cases. So, but what you can worry about is the things that I listed. And I think if you can become obsessed with those and you can enjoy them and you can really just get caught up in the fun of it and the process, those times will come. And I can promise you that. I know I had this really, when I was young, when I first started actually running track races, I got obsessed with times. And this was when I was probably about 14. And it had such a bad effect on me. I had two races that I remember where I was like, I was thinking, all right, I want to run a 4:05 for 1500. I need to run 65 seconds. And I was trying to be aware of it during the race. And it was so bad. It did not make me better at all. What helped me was just focusing on racing people, which is something that I had always done. So I think the times, you know, they are what they are, and they'll come if you take care of the other stuff. And that's what you should be putting your attention towards.
Back to the Discord. This one's from our old friend, San Diego Hobby Jogger.
Dude, rest in peace, Road to San Diego. I feel for you, man.
Had to remind him. Ask him who would win in an arm wrestling match, him or Ollie?
I would probably say me, but I think Ollie has a certain intimidating strength to him in an arm wrestling situation.
And then his second question was, can we see the return of the Chicken Boy Morgs theme song, please? And thank you.
Oh, that's a throwback. I don't think that's been on a video for like 3 years, 2 years. Yeah, if I make YouTube videos, I could bring it back. But, you know, some things with social media, I think, or with any media, you know, some things live in a certain time period. And at some point, you have to say goodnight to them and put them to bed. And then they might never wake up. And that's what happened with that series and that theme song. It never woke up. And rather than living in the past, I aspire to live in the present and to make a new theme song, ideally, which I haven't done. But that's what I would choose to do. You know, I think you got to always be growing. But I think if it was the right moment, bringing it back would be special. So I could see that happening as a one-off maybe. Who knows? I got to start making YouTube videos consistently first. That's the real crux of this issue.
Hey, Morgan, Ollie, Jordy, Tom, and of course, Gus. On last week's pod, Mario mentioned how some kid came up to him at BU saying he heard on the pod that Mario's getting 50% of all the meat money. Jordy says he doesn't remember mentioning Mario getting 50% of the meat money. Well, I'm that kid. Between 8:45 and 8:55 on the episode before the BU Last Chance, Ollie says, he, in parentheses, Mario Garcia Romo, You put the THs in there. Said he's getting 50% of all the meat money because he's bringing the wave lights. When I heard this, I knew Ollie was probably just talking out his bum. But the truth is, when I saw Mario Garcia Romo, I couldn't pass up the opportunity to talk with Mario Garcia Romo. So thank you, Coffee Club Podcast, for helping me out. Sent from my iPhone, Sean. I think there's a question in there.
Yeah, I think answered the question. It was so funny because when, I don't know, did we say this on the pod? I can't remember. We're the worst at remembering what we say on the podcast. So when this was brought up, yeah, our thoughts were, yeah, I don't remember saying that, but that sounds like something that Ollie could have jokingly said. And it seems like that is the case.
So, yeah. There's like a little bit of a thrash in the comments because apparently, well, you guys were talking about how the wave lights were like 1 second off at BU. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And someone commented who knows. So I think wave lights are a company. Like they're, it's like Kleenex. Like,
guys, you lost your trademark. I'm sorry. It's gone.
Yeah. And they were like, by the way, that is not the wave lights that, you know, whatever. And I don't want to rag on the company that showed up to BU. Like, it was really nice they brought them and were trying to help.
Yeah.
But...
Well, the wave lights worked great. It wasn't an issue with the product. It was an issue with the app, with the use of it.
Yeah. Or the not wave lights.
Not wave lights. Yeah. No, dude, wave lights lost their trademark. There's no way.
Yeah, yeah. But I wanted to add to that. The person, one of the people setting them up is a Coffee Club fan. It was like, I can't find the DM. It happened a while ago, but they were like... I don't know what's going on with the 50%, but we're setting up the wave lights. And he sent a picture of like them putting the wave lights.
Yeah, maybe
down.
He wanted to cash in on it. He was like, wait, Mario's getting 50% for bringing these. First off, he didn't bring them. I brought them. Where's my cut?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's probably how that went.
But if that's you, leave a comment and we'll give you your love.
Also, please tell us what to call them if it's not wave lights. Yeah. So wave light can retain its trademark.
All right. Dear Morgan and the rest of the boys. I'm hoping you guys can talk a little bit more about your experiences with working with a sports psych throughout your career. Maybe you can share how often you meet with one and how much you think it helps. I know Morgan has mentioned he's worked with one in the past, but not sure if you ever took a deep dive. Still working through listening to old episodes. Thanks again for bringing this sweet, sweet podcast into this world. You three plus Gus are truly making fans of the sport. My wife and I have always been runners, but had never tuned into track meets aside from the Olympics prior to listening to the pod. Now we're tuned in to most Diamond Leagues and at least any time from the OAC is racing. Thanks, Stephen P.
Thank you, Stephen. I have taken multiple deep dives with sports psychs. It's kind of what you do. And I've had a lot of positive results. I've never had negative results, I don't think. but... Sorry, little inside joke with Tom. I think it's something that I would recommend. If you're thinking about it, I would 100% recommend trying it. I think I've had a lot of positive results, and most people that I know at the elite level that have tried it have had very positive results as well. With that said, I think everyone is unique individual, and I think not every sports psych knows exactly what's going on with you and knows maybe running or whatever and is probably right for you. I guess I should take that. Maybe I haven't had negative results, but I've had sessions in the past with previous ones, like a few years ago, where I was like, I don't think this person earned their $150 or whatever it is. So I guess you could call that a negative experience in a way, but I don't regret trying it in any way at all. So overall, positive. And I think it was more of a case of needing a different person at that time. So I would certainly recommend it. And some of my most foundational thoughts about the sport and my place in the sport and the world come from specifically working with a sports psychologist. And so it's had a massive impact on me in a really, really positive way. It's the reason I started meditating and going through down rabbit holes of, you know, reading certain books about, you know, life philosophies and stuff. A lot of like, it just exposed me to so many great things that have had a really great impact on me, I think. So I would certainly recommend it if you haven't tried it before, or even if you have tried it and it hasn't worked, but you're once again thinking it might be something that's good for you. So yeah, there's a lot of the emotional side of, I believe that we work so hard every single day on the physical side of the sport that, and that we should similarly work on the mental side of it. I believe that's an ongoing, constant process, just like the physical side is. And I think a sports psych is really appropriate to help guide you along that path, that journey.
Back to the Discord from Boober, longtime listener and friend. Who would have the funniest type 5 minute stand-up routine on the pod? Or, no, on the team.
On the team. Well, I think it would be, I wanted to say Ollie initially, just because he has within his memory banks probably about 5 hours of really funny other like comedy stand-ups that he could just mesh together and make the perfect routine. I think you're looking at, I think Joe could be a sleeper pick. I'm not sure what his routine would look like, but I think he could really play into his personality and make it really funny. So I'm looking at him as well as kind of like a dark horse in this scenario. And that's about it. I think, yeah, I don't know. I think we'd all be pretty rough out the gates, if I'm being completely honest. But you know, maybe we'll get there.
He would take it like really seriously, I think. Dylan. Like he would like really like sit Dylan. Down and write.
I forgot about Dylan. See, Dylan's naturally very, very, very funny.
Yeah.
And he likes to talk.
Yeah.
He loved being on the podcast. So I think he's someone who, that's like, yes, I agree with you. I think an avenue that would excite him.
Everyone had like a five, like everyone was in a challenge where they had to come up with 5 minutes. And everyone, like a lot of people would just naturally be like kind of nervous or kind of be like, I don't know what to do. I feel like Dylan would like
thrive.
Yeah, he'd put on a comedy writing hat and like figure it out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, we should do that. Next time we're on camp or something, we should have comedy night and everyone should go up and perform. Wouldn't that be something special?
Dear the cutest Wisconsin Badger.
Thank you.
He didn't write that. I just added that. No, I'm just kidding. In a world with 2-hour marathoners, 3:45 indoor milers, 12:35 5K runners, how do you and how can I possibly stay motivated to compete? It's tough to feel like I'll ever do anything in the running world as a 67 half marathoner and 2:22 marathoner. Perhaps you feel the same way despite your incredible prowess. Love, Mike M. P.S. Hoping I can maybe catch you guys in Colorado this summer. Please.
Please. Thank you, Mike, for the question. And it seems like we're developing a bit of a theme here among these questions, which is something along the lines of comparison is the thief of joy. Maybe there's a more succinct, better way of saying it, but, and that's a very cliched thing, but, you know, it's been a bit of a recurring theme throughout this episode, but it is something that, as a professional runner and someone with a lot of potential that doesn't feel like they've met their potential, I struggle with a lot because I really think, I mean, it's my world, it's my universe, it's my livelihood, is going out and competing with these people that are doing amazing things. So I really am comparing myself to them in a lot of ways. And it is hard, you know, to feel like you're not able to go out. And like, there's a big gap between these other people and where you're at the moment. But if you let that destroy your love for your reason, your love for the sport, then I think maybe you need to really evaluate your reason for doing the sport. Because, you know, if you took that mindset to other aspects of life, like you just would be paralyzed into not doing anything. What would be the point of anything if you don't want to do it unless you're going to be the best in the world at it? Because by definition, there's only one person that can be the best in the world at it. And, you know, maybe even they're not happy and they're only the best at it for a brief period of time in the grand scheme of things, really. So, yeah, my answer is to evaluate what it is, your why, to look at your why. Like, what is the reason you're actually doing it? Why are you running? You know, if it's to be the best in the world, well, you're really setting yourself up for failure unless you're Jakob Ingebrigtsen right now. Well, that's not true. It's a good goal to have. But if that's all there is to it, then, you know, it's only going to take you so far, as opposed to someone whose goal is to try and get better every day, or their goal is to, you know, let's just say be healthy and enjoy it and grow as a person. That's where I often find myself ending up because as I mentioned, it's natural to compare yourself and to think about these things and to have negative feelings associated with them sometime. But when that happens to me and I reflect upon it, it becomes, my reason for doing this work becomes something much more personal, not so much related to other people. But for me, I want to see how great I can be. And my pursuit of trying to be as great as I can be, I think, makes me the best person and allows me to experience life in the fullest. At least it has for the last, since I dedicated myself to running. And so that's why I love doing it. So I would hope that you could find a similar spark, enjoyment, for yourself, you know, because otherwise, what is the point, you know?
Length and girth measurements for yourself, Ollie and George, please. Pray your hands emoji. Kind regards, Brian L. And that's not his name. He signed it with a different name. I think he's trying to set up his friend Brian.
Brian.
That's come on, Brian.
That's an inappropriate question, which we will answer on the Patreon. Good time to launch that.
Just for that.
Yeah. We might have a Patreon coming at some point, and there will be exact sizes on there if you sign up.
At the right tier.
At the right tier.
Yeah. So pay attention to that.
It's behind a paywall. I apologize.
Hi, Morgan. I'm going to altitude to train for the first time ever this summer for 10 weeks. What advice do you have for adapting/getting into training? For context, I'm currently a junior in college where I train at 2,000 feet and I'm going up to 7,000 feet. Thanks, Isaac. P.S. Tell Gus I say hello.
I will do that. Yeah, so 7,000 feet is actually quite high in terms of, like, you will feel it, and not just in running probably. So I think your first week especially, you should look at as more of an adaption phase. And you shouldn't stress about training hard. And during this time, you should focus on just trying to get your body to feel good. And at 7,000 feet, you potentially will never feel normal, good, like you would at sea level. When I have gone up to that altitude, I've struggled with sleeping. So that's something that has an effect on me. And you're going to have to drink a lot more water and probably eat a lot more food because your body's just working a lot harder to do the normal processes of living. So that's not even taking into account training necessarily. So I would just get those things out of the way. Expect to feel, yeah, bad on your runs initially. And I guess, I don't know how it's going to work with what type of training you'll be doing. Easy running, you just go off feel. You can run the same amount of miles. But I think it's where you come when you're trying to do intensity, which I'm not sure how much intensity you would be trying to do at this time, when you will have to make a lot of adjustments and you really have to more go feel / give longer recovery if you're doing certain things. And that's where it becomes a little bit more complicated. But yeah, don't be afraid to give your body time and let yourself recover. Tom's just been at altitude for about a week now. So do you have any thoughts on this?
I'm not going there for 10 weeks. So I'm only maybe 7 days in. And I actually felt pretty good the first few days. But after my first workout, 2 days out, my butt has been kicked. So now I think, like, the lesson there is recover harder.
You definitely have to recover harder. Yeah. You will feel it. And yeah, the fact that you're there for 10 weeks is nice because it really does take the pressure off those first few weeks. Like, and you just look at getting in like a routine and always have confidence that just being there and running easy, like, just will you'll get a lot of gains from that. Don't stress about having to do certain workouts or whatever it is, and which I'm sure like you maybe will be, but that's less important. If you're going to altitude, you're getting a lot of other benefits already, and that's good. That's really good. And you'll see improvements from that when you get back to sea level. So yeah, just feel confident in that. Workouts intensity, you're going to have to go off feel a bit more and adjust stuff, longer recoveries as well, potentially. And make sure, yeah, you look after yourself a lot more, especially when it comes to fueling and hydrating. I think that's a lot more difficult at altitude than it is at sea level. Sea level, you can get away with, not taking it quite as seriously.
And wear sunscreen.
Wear sunscreen and probably glasses.
Yeah.
I didn't need sunglasses until I came to altitude.
This one's back at the Discord, Coffee Cafe 37, aka Shawnee T. What's Morgan's favorite fruit and type of bean?
Fruit? Wow. I love fruit so much. So it's a tough question because I try not to just say like mango. Because mango is like obviously like
life.
It's just so typical, you know? It's just so.
Is it typical?
I think mango is
pretty unique.
Yeah, maybe where I come from, it's a bit different.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
That side of the world.
It's just so obviously like the best fruit to a lot of people. Yeah. Like it's just the most tasty and it's so amazing. Fun fact, I started eating mango skin recently.
The skin?
Yeah, Jacinta does it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen that.
It's not like the tastiest thing.
Yeah. Is it like good fiber?
I'm sure it's
excellent fiber, but is it more nutritious or?
I have no idea.
Like fun to eat.
I just do it because Cinta does it.
It's like the national fruit of the Philippines. I'm gonna ask.
Really?
My mom.
I wonder if they do it. Yeah, Cinta grew up doing it in Ethiopia, so I guess it just became normalized. But aside from mango, I'm a really big stone fruit guy, particularly yellow nectarines. And I have this weird thing about me where I'm more into a tart flavor profile and a firmer fruit. So if you're the type of person who likes a super ripe nectarine or peach and you're sharing them with me, you're going to be really angry at me because I'm going to eat them all before they get ripe. Just a heads up.
What about the bananas that are brown now?
Yeah, I like bananas more on the unripe like side as well. Bananas are probably the fruit that I eat the most, but...
Oh, what about your favorite bean?
Bean. Like coffee bean?
Could be any bean.
What other beans are there? Like kidney bean?
Garbanzo.
Garbanzo, not the same thing.
Black bean, red bean.
Probably chickpea.
Pinto bean, refried beans.
Chickpea.
Coffee bean.
Garbanzo bean. Yeah, that's
Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean. Oh, obviously Mr. Bean. But if we're excluding him, I'm going to say chickpea / garbanzo bean. I think they're
good answer.
The best.
Dear Morgan, this is from Emily. Hi. Hopefully I'm not too late to the cauldron with my very serious running question. I sprained my ankle recently and I'm cleared to run, but at a reduced workload. And it still hurts a little, especially with fast paces. I'm very sad and all I want to do is get back to training at full volume because that's what I love most. You and the boys all seem very level-headed about taking time off or lower volume for an injury. I don't know how you do it. My question is, are you guys actually that relaxed / accepting? And if so, how do you get your mind to that point?
I'm not. Well, it depends, but I can definitely trick myself into overdoing it. And then it's essentially like I'm beating my head against the wall. And then I get to the point where I realize that. And then I make up for it and then I become more relaxed. And yeah, see, because the thing for me, my feeling is I personally find it mentally really hard to train if things don't feel right or to train if I feel like things aren't moving in the right direction. So if I'm doing too much for what my body will allow, I will, one, be physically probably feeling worse every day because it's not recovering, and then two, even more so mentally, it's really hard for me, and that's when I'm struggling a lot. And so the thing that helps me the most and makes me feel the most relaxed is when I actually come to acceptance with an injury. And often that's not a solo process. That's something that happens with my team, with people that I love and trust. And it makes such a big difference. And oftentimes it comes with working specifically with someone like a physio that I trust as well. And once I have a plan, like I feel like I'm doing the right thing for my body and I have a plan to move me back in the right direction, my mind comes to ease and I feel good and I feel relaxed. But often that comes after a lot of pain and suffering. So it's a process. It's a similar process to grief in some ways, I would say.
We're down to our last two.
Amazing.
Actually, this or three. This person sent two voice notes a year ago and then re-forwarded it. So
we didn't get to it a year ago.
But I'm glad that you sent it.
Hey, Ollie, Morgan, George. This is Dason J from the Discord. My question for the Coffee Cauldron is, what is your most favorite, coolest running trail or route that you've been able to run on? I want two answers. One answer from a place that you lived out of long term. So whether it's like Flag, Boulder, or like Cronulla, Sydney, Madison, Wisconsin. And the other answer is more of like a destination place, maybe a place you've been to for a meet or a place that you were able to train out of for a short period of time, anything like that. Thanks for the answer. And as per the words of the San Diego Hobby Jogger, I hope you have a day.
That was funny. What was it? So the two questions, what was the two differences?
It was, I think, what's your favorite trail, but one in a place you live and then maybe the dream destination one?
Okay. Dream destination one is tough because like, how would I know?
Or maybe like you've been before on your travels. For the, we both got distracted, I think, in the middle of this.
Yeah.
We had a special guest walk in the door.
Yeah.
Here, I'll replay it from the middle.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like Flag, Boulder, or like Cronulla, Sydney, Madison, Wisconsin. And the other answer is more of like a destination place, maybe a place you've been to for a meet or a place that you were able to train out of for a short.
Okay. So that's a tough one to say. Like every single place that I've lived at, I definitely have like a favorite trail. In Madison, for example, there was a 5-mile loop from the locker room called Picnic Point, which if you've been to Madison, you know, it's just like epic. Like you run on this little path out into the lake and the view is amazing. You take it in, that's 2.5 miles exactly. And then you head back. So that was like Saturday mornings was always that. And it was the best. In terms of other ones, kind of a weird answer, but I feel like there's a lot of cool trails in around LA. Like, but that's kind of a biased one because we've gone on some weird runs with the team after we've raced in LA. Like the next day, we'll just go on an easy run to some random location that I don't even know of. And we'll find somewhere super random, cool to run through like some canyons on some dirt. And I've always really enjoyed those. But I can't tell you like a specific trail.
Hey, Ollie, Morgan, George. This is Dason J from the Discord.
He's back.
Asking for a friend, if you were like an 18-minute 5K runner trying to break 17 minutes and you could only cycle through 4 workouts in your season, what 4 key workouts would they be? Thanks and have a rip day.
Did it again. Did the thing. You said the thing. Honestly, it's a great question. I don't think you need more than 4 workouts, really. I think off the top of my head, does a long run count as a workout in this question, do you think?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, so I think a long run, I think like specifically, if I'm just being super specific with 4 specific workouts, I'll say a log run, threshold, and if I have to be specific, I'll just say mile reps. And then I would say also a longer continuous threshold. So let's say like a 5-mile threshold, slower.
Actually, that he gave a pace. He's like,
I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know, Tom. Everyone has different thresholds. Even among 30-minute 5K runners, they have different thresholds. And then I would just say hills. I would just say do like let's say, I was going to say like 30 to 60 second hills in a session. And I think to run a 5K, was it cross country? Did he say cross country?
I'm guessing. Assume not.
Oh, no. Well, even so.
I'm just assuming he's out of high school.
Yeah. But still, those are the four that I would pick. I think you can achieve, if you're only going to do four things, I think you can get 90% of the way there doing that.
Would you add strides?
I guess hills will get you going there. I'm going to take them as like a kind of freebie.
Yeah.
Easy days and strides are given.
We're on to our final email from a very special person. This is from Frojo, and there's six questions in here.
Six?
It's kind of rapid fire, yeah. But I think this is a perfect way to end this.
Amazing.
The first question.
He deserves at least six.
Yeah, at least six. How are you?
Good.
What is your favorite color and why?
Purple. Because it's Justin Bieber's favorite color. No, it just always was.
What's your favorite Atlanta episode?
Haven't seen it, but I really want to. That's a show that is on my list of like, I know I'm going to love it when I watch it, but I haven't watched it yet.
That's funny because we were listening to him right before this.
I'm a big Childish Gambino, Donald Glover guy.
Will you be at Penn Relays?
Yes.
Will there be a group run / hangout at Penn Relays?
I hope so.
Cheers, Joe.
Cheers to you. Thank you, Frojo. That's it, huh?
That's it. We went through them all.
Wow. Well, that episode was actually, for something that we had to put together,
it was meaty.
Last minute. It was meaty and it was good and it was fun. Once again, thank you so much, everyone, for contributing to this episode to make it happen. Next week, we will be back with a more normally scheduled program. George will be healthy and ready to go. Ollie still won't be around for a few weeks, at least a month maybe or so. He's still got some more racing to do down under in Australia. But next week, we should be able to get back into the swing of things. But yeah, I think I really enjoyed this episode. I hope that you guys at home enjoyed it as well and got something out of it. And yeah, that's it from me. Thanks everyone for listening. Look forward to seeing you guys all again next week. Until then, take care. Bye.